Welcome to Real Money with David Holland, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. David is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of financial experience. And because he actually provides advice to clients on a daily basis, our hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He also offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Holland Advisory Services and Holland Insurance Services are separate affiliated companies that share common ownership under Holland Financial. Commentary given during this radio program is usually pretty smart, but should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities should not be considered an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and financial planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual's situation. Only if you hire David and his firm to help you, and only available where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. Here he is, David Holland.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. So, you know, in the news, we're reading in various publications. I've got some here, Financial Advisor Magazine, Wall Street Journal. We're hearing more and more about this thing called a frontier fund or frontier markets. There's several markets that are getting more attention, and one of them is Africa. And so, actually, I got lucky here. Sometimes people call me, which is cool. We call people and they call us sometimes. So we had the senior portfolio manager for Commonwealth Funds approach us about being on the program. And he's on the line with us, Robert Sharar. And I know I've mangled it again, Robert, even though I practiced it.
You were right on target.
Oh, good. Sharar. I got it right. Robert Sharar. And he is the senior portfolio manager for Commonwealth. The website is commonwealthfunds.com. And we're going to talk with Robert a little bit today about Africa and it being a place to invest. So welcome to the program, Robert.
Thank you.
I'm glad you're with us. So Robert is a fellow CPA. Love that. Also has an MBA and a JD, Northeastern University, LLM in taxation from Boston University, and a business administration accounting, University of Florida. We won't hold that against him. So, Robert, lots of education. Tell us, you've been doing, you've got actually a portfolio of funds here. It's not just the African fund. You also have some other funds. So tell us a little bit first before we dive into our topic today. Tell us a little bit about the Commonwealth Funds as a group.
Well, the Commonwealth Fund came about when we started managing a New Zealand fund in the early 1990s. We'd been investing directly in New Zealand since the late, the early 80s, and so we decided to actually have a mutual fund that focused only on New Zealand. That was our first fund.
Okay.
And then now, and we broadened that to include Australia. Then we have a global fund, a fund that invested in real estate-related companies worldwide, a Japan fund, and an Africa fund. And the Africa fund can invest anywhere in the continent of Africa or in companies that principally do business in Africa.
Okay. And so we're going to talk a little bit about Africa because I think for a lot of people, and I'm sure you hear this a lot, Robert, people see the news, they hear about the strife and conflict. And I imagine that is certainly true in some places. But I guess the first very big fat softball I want to throw you is, are our perceptions, a lot of the public's perceptions about Africa correct?
You are actually very correct, because what is going on is far too much focus on the problems, and we're really overlooking the successes. The starting point is that Africa is a continent, not a country. And because of that, there are different governments, there's different capital markets, different transparencies, democracies, etc., that exist throughout the continent. There are many examples of peaceful transitions of government. The civil society is demanding more transparency. Education is improving. Healthcare services are improving. Infrastructure is improving. The stock exchange that existed there, the South African Stock Exchange, I think is over 150 years old, but it's not the only one that's been a stock exchange on the continent for a long time. So people hear about all the bad news. There is bad news. You can find that. But that's not the story of Africa today. That really misses the point.
Interesting. So let's broaden a little bit, then we'll come back into focus on the Africa specifically. You know, a lot of people in the United States have taken the approach in investing what they know. You know that, and there are some people that advocate that, you know, in terms of fund management or investment management, that you invest in what you know. And so I routinely see, Robert, people come in with portfolios that are heavy, heavy, heavy United States, to the point of being, even in some cases, 100% investing in just the big blue chip, large cap stocks in the United States. And you know, there's certainly merit to that, but you know, part of, for a lot of people, they're not aware about the rest of the world, you know, and we have these developing countries around the world, the ones that had been not as developed, China and India, you know, some of the South American countries. And so we have different types of or stages of development. And so you have these emerging market funds, and then you have this even less developed and maybe further down the line to come, these what we call the frontier. So help my listeners understand that a little bit about the different types, maybe some characteristics, and then we'll get into a little bit more specifics about Africa.
Well, for an individual investor, I think there is... If you're doing your own selection of the stocks, then investing in what you know is a pretty good rule.
Yeah.
But that's not how you do a portfolio allocation. You know, your portfolio allocation has to be at a higher level. And not only do you want to, you know, diversify between classes of assets, but also where those assets are located, because it is a global marketplace. And things like currency returns come into play. All economies don't act in the same direction at the same time, so you can have performance in some countries and not in others. So by diversifying your portfolio on a global basis, what you do is get the benefits or at times the detriment of that expansion. But if you believe in diversity, then you really need to have some global exposure in your portfolio. You get some of that by buying some American stocks that do business overseas, but it's not the same thing, and usually those don't get very deep in what you refer to as frontier markets. They're not big players, or it doesn't make a material aspect of their business. Just to give you an example, if you bought Walmart, you now have an investment in something called Massmart, which is a South African-based retailer that owns stores called Game, which sell all kinds of appliances and other consumer goods.
Hmm.
So by buying Walmart, you've made an investment in the retail sector in Africa. The problem is it's such a small piece of Walmart that it would not necessarily benefit proportionally to what that region does.
I see. And your point's right on. In fact, that was one of the things I was doing a little bit of reading in this for my conversation with you today. And the correlation of, you know, you talk about building a diversified portfolio. The frontier market is only about 3/4 correlated. So it only moves in lockstep, you know, about 75%. It doesn't move right in lockstep with the more developed countries. And I think that's important with the purpose of what you said of getting toward that more diversified asset allocated portfolio.
Well, that's true. And I think, you know, to help people who may be doing some of this on their own, you don't necessarily have to use a fund manager. You can buy ADRs, which are U.S. Traded shares of foreign companies. And there are a number of those from Africa, for example. But they tend to be more likely larger companies that are more global. They often are resource companies or banks or telephone companies or things like that. And what you don't get is the penetration in the local business aspects of those countries, which often are going because maybe they're agriculturally oriented, they're having good results from the sale of their agricultural products, or populations are growing and consumer sales are taking place. You're not participating in those growths, and that's why there's that correlation variance.
Hmm.
Because once you get beyond the big stocks, which sometimes are the ADRs, these markets often act. In New Zealand, for example, what's happening in the rainfall in the South Island and what the export of milk products and sheep goods and all is far more important sometimes than what's happening in the, you know, the New York Stock Exchange, particularly if you're in companies that are farming stations or providing transport or refrigeration or those types of things in those regions. Their success can be going in one direction while the stock markets may be going in another.
Good point. And because, you know, it is a global market, but at the same time, we don't want our portfolio to move in lockstep always. It's really essential. And that I find that very interesting about some of these opportunities to invest in really lower correlated asset classes and being able to invest in things that are going to move differently. Now, let's do this, Robert. I want to focus in tighter on Africa because I think that's really an interesting topic. Let's take a quick break. Robert Sharar is our guest today, ladies and gentlemen. He's a senior portfolio manager of Commonwealth Funds, commonwealthfunds.com. And we're going to take this short break. We'll be right back.
Have you noticed most of the financial literature available is either so specific it doesn't apply or too generic to answer even the most basic questions? This revelation inspired David Holland to write his first two books, Confessions of a Financial Planner, Secrets to a Secure Retirement, and How to Get Great Advice and Avoid Financial Scams. These how-to guides contain easily accessible information on a wide variety of topics concerning personal finances. An effortless weekend read, you'll find clarification on what a mutual fund is, how to choose the right financial professional, and much more. Call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN to request a free excerpt from David's first book, Secrets to a Secure Retirement. The number again is 888-747-7526. Or visit davidholland.com for more information on this innovative book series.
And we are back. Robert Sherrar is our guest today, Senior Portfolio Manager of Commonwealth Funds, commonwealthfunds.com. And you know, Robert, what a neat opportunity for us to talk to you about this this focused area. Talk to us a little bit more specifically, and for my listeners out there, I want them to understand your role. For basic terms, you in operating the Commonwealth Funds, you are what we would call a fund manager.
That's correct.
Okay, so that, ladies and gentlemen, that's what Robert does. Is he's managing this fund or these funds? The African Fund is one of them. Commonwealth Africa's name of the fund, and the ticker symbol. CAFRX?
That's correct.
All right, very good. So, okay, so let's tighten up and focus in on Africa. What are some of the, I know you talked about different areas of Africa being a continent, not a country. How many countries do we have in Africa?
Well, you're dealing with approximately 60 countries.
Okay.
And of those, about a third of the, more than a third of those have active stock exchanges.
Oh, okay.
In each country. The South African Stock Exchange has been there for over 150 years. But, for example, the Malawi Stock Exchange dates back to Northern Rhodesia and Nyasaland. So the history of financial marketplaces in Africa is not something new. It's just largely unknown outside of Africa. One of the things we've done, and we were talking about that earlier, is we put links to every African Stock Exchange on our website, as well as information for the State Department, other regional areas. So people that want to learn about this, you know, can do some research on their own.
Very good. And that's on the website, commonwealthfunds.com.
That's correct. And if you don't mind, I want to let people know something else.
Sure.
That for an American investor, there are ways that you can do this. I mentioned people could buy their own ADRs, and if somebody wants to study stocks, they could do those because those stocks furnish financial information very similar to a U.S. company. There are a couple, what I will call index funds, or ETFs, exchange-traded funds. But this is where you have to be careful. For example, many people would be surprised to learn that the African Index ETF has over 25% of its equity investments in Egypt. And they have 5% of the, in Canadian companies. They're all energy companies. So, you know, while they do have South African stocks and Nigerian stocks and Kenyan stocks, if you look, you have an extremely heavy weighting to the energy sector, a resource sector, and very country-specific. And so for an investor, that's one of the reasons that while those can make up a part of a portfolio, they don't tend to get you beyond the large-cap marketplace, and you don't get that non-correlation you talked about earlier.
Right, and that's a good point, Robert. And, you know, you want to look beyond, obviously, you don't want to be geographically skewed in looking at the continent, but also we want more representation than oil and energy, because you have, I would imagine, a pretty significant service sector that we want to, if we're seeking that exposure for the asset allocation, we want exposure to that service sector component as well, don't we?
Oh, absolutely. And one of the big plays in Africa is the growth of the consumer class. I've quit saying middle class because they're not middle class necessarily in the context you and I think of it.
Sure.
But they're clearly a growing consumer class. And the things they spend money on very quickly are health services, housing, food products, clothing, housing, household products, education, and medical services. So owning a supermarket chain that's pan-Africa lets you be in that retail space. Owning some of the life insurance companies and banks that are doing micro-lending, selling life insurance and auto insurance over your cell phone, term insurance, those sorts of products, are pan-Africa in their application. And I think people really don't appreciate some of the things that have happened technologically. Because they didn't have all the landlines we have here, they just skipped that in some way.
I read that. I love that story because they just went straight to the cell phones.
Well, I was telling you, I think when we talked once before about the college program I was at Florida Southern College in Lakeland last week, and one of the participants is from a clinic, health clinic, associated with the university in Johannesburg. We actually toured that last year with some MBA students, and we're walking through, all the pharmaceuticals are being dispensed by robotics. There was a pharmacist there, but it was a neat thing to watch. I mean, they were dispensing these things with robotics. I constantly run into situations where technology, like doing the insurance over the phone, banking over the phone, and those are allowing them to reach people that historically would never have been serviced because everybody has a cell phone. Or almost. I mean, it's just unbelievable how many people have a cell phone. And they use that to transact business on the continent. So we really think companies that focus on consumer needs have huge growth potential. The other is tourism. It's difficult to get a flight. I happened to fly back this morning from Orlando, and the fellow sitting next to me from the States, who I didn't know before, is representing tour operators or safari operators in South Africa. And we were talking about even how hard it is to get there now because of all the passenger traffic on the airlines going there. So there clearly are some things happening that are very positive on the continent. The other thing is medical services, education services, transportation. You mentioned this earlier. You've got to get these goods somewhere, and freight haul forwarders, the airlines on the continent, all those are good ways to make a play in the growth of the region. We do involve ourselves sometimes in resource companies, but more often on the fringes, people that are supplying them or things of that nature, because I think most investors, they can go buy a global, like in energy, you can go buy Exxon.
Sure.
You know, they are an energy company. So I don't add a lot of value to the portfolio by overweighting in those kind of companies, which have really big global competitors to them.
Interesting stuff. Let's do this. Let's take another quick break. We'll come right back with Robert Sharar. He is our guest today, Senior Portfolio Manager of Commonwealth Funds, and we're talking about Africa and Frontier Funds. Stay right there.
There are hundreds of annuities available in today's marketplace. How can you know if one is right for you? Certified financial planner David Holland answers this question and more in his educational booklet on annuities. To get your free copy, call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN. The annuity booklet provides a plain English explanation of the different types of annuities so you can decide if one is a good fit for your situation. Again, that number is 888-747-7526.
And welcome back. We're with Robert Sharar. He is our guest today, Commonwealth Funds. He's the fund manager, and the website is commonwealthfunds.com. And we're talking about undiscovered countries, so to speak, for a lot of people here in the United States, not being as familiar, Robert, with what goes on in Africa. And there's a lot that's happening, it sounds like. You know, the thing that was interesting, I ran across a statistic, and I wanted to get your opinion about this, is that the whole frontier market, it's still, inherently by definition, is still very small. The statistic I had, you probably are familiar with this, that the entire frontier market is about one-third the market cap of Apple.
So, I'm surprised it's that big.
Okay. So, I mean, the opportunity, of course, that the frontier markets represent, and you're talking, of course, about some of those opportunities with Africa, is it's still very much on the front end. Their consumer class, of course, has a long way to go. And I one of the questions I wanted to ask you and get your opinion about is what's going to drive that growth or that emergence for the different countries on the African continent?
Well, let me give you an example.
Sure.
The government of Malawi legislated a new rule that says that pension plans must be, I'm going to oversimplify, but essentially have to have independent trustees, and that the government itself has to turn over management of the pension monies to third-party managers. Now, for the first time, that money is going to be available in the local economy, not to buy government bonds and feed the government, but to buy securities and issues from the private sector, as well as government obligations. So there's a source of capital on the continent that needs to be employed, and that is going to help the markets independent of any third-party external investors at all.
Boy,
so
if we could,
rapid sophistication taking place, and that's not the only country that's happening yet.
That's fascinating stuff. And there again, they're skipping, it's another skip of an intermediary step. Imagine if we did that here on our continent.
You're right. And I don't want to tell you it's happening overnight. I mean, they're struggling a little bit. The private sector, they're doing it pretty quick. The government realized all of a sudden they got to fund it.
Oh.
It's nice to talk about taking your accrued liabilities.
Right.
Another thing of funding it. But they're being reasonably transparent, and they're trying. I mean, they're moving in the right direction. The fact it may take them a couple years, you know, they're trying to say, well, do we fund it all this year, or do we, you know, how do we do it? They're doing it. The point is they're talking about it openly. The business community knows about it. The newspapers know about it. And the direction is the right direction. So that's a huge help.
That's excellent. So let's talk about some of your thoughts for your fund, the Commonwealth Africa Fund. And the ticker CAFRX. You talked about people, you know, of course, can do some of these things on their own, and people do. But for a lot of investors, they are much better served by either working with an advisor or doing it on their own, using funds like yours that allow them to build that diversified portfolio. What are some of your thoughts about the direction you're taking with your fund? What are some of your, I won't say your quote-unquote top picks or best picks, but what are some of the things that you're looking at going into the new year? What do you see as some of the things that you want to be looking at more closely or looking at opportunities?
Well, I mentioned earlier things that involve the consumer sector, either getting the goods and services, the actual goods and services or products, and that includes everything from financial products to consumption products like food and clothing and household goods and things of that nature. But it may be helpful to step back,
sure.
And he would appreciate this as a fellow, you know, CPA. What we're really looking at in Africa are largely small cap stocks.
Right.
While there are some big stocks. And there's a real opportunity here because the balance sheets of these companies don't have a lot of foo-foo financials on them.
Hmm.
And it's fairly, you know, people don't realize how long audited financials have existed in Africa. In some of the countries, many of the countries I go to, it's not unusual to find a Deloitte office or a KPMG office that dates back pre-independence. So there's plenty of accounting resources. You have to look at it a little bit differently because those companies report on international financial reporting standards, and there's
sure.
some nuances that are different from U.S. GAAP. In some respects, it's cleaner, and others are some things you and I aren't used to, like valuation adjustments and things
right.
of that nature. Whereas we historically reduced everything to cost, they do adjust their balance sheets to fair value for some of their assets. And so you have to be careful if you look at price to book. It may not be book in the concept that people like you and I learned when we went to school. So, but within that context, there's plenty of opportunity to look at financial information and benefit from just what we would call fundamental investment analysis. And the other things that make these companies interesting is they believe in paying dividends. Historically, they've always had fairly generous percentages of their earnings distributed to the shareholders, so your cash return is often higher than what you'd be accustomed to in a U.S. market.
I read, Robert, it was about, for Frontier Funds or Frontier Investing, about 4% sound right for a dividend?
Wouldn't surprise
okay.
me. It could be higher and even higher than that in some areas.
Sure.
And there's some reasons you'll find that happens. One is, most companies that we've run into have a strategic shareholder, and I find that pretty healthy. And so what that means is they tend to act in the interest of someone who owned their own business, for example.
Hmm.
So having strategic shareholders, and at times it may be more than one company. I mean, it may be a couple strategic shareholders. It's a little bit about like what you found in Japan when you look at the Japanese companies and you realize how many cross-ownerships are.
Hmm.
Africa has some similarities. But it's not the same thing as the Japanese approach to it. So, for example, an insurance company may have a big stake in a company. They may own 15, 20, 25%. And what they provide is, and they do that as an investment for the insurance company, but they provide an anchor shareholder who sets business policies, and those often include distributions back to the ownership group.
So, you know, I think the thing that really people need to pick up on here, Robert, with your giving us a glimpse inside of what happens in Africa and how these countries that are still very much developing, a lot of people probably look at Africa and we think about the companies and how they're being managed. Well, you just described this, you know, it's very sophisticated what you describe. It's not like it's some warlord who's sitting around on some army tank, you know, owning these companies.
No, absolutely not. Now, in some places, I did have the experience about 20 years ago in one country. I could never find the accounting office. And I finally went to the university, and I asked to go look at the library in the university. And I went to the library, and I realized the problem. It was one of the French-speaking countries, and all they had was economic books.
Hmm.
They didn't view accounting as an academic subject. It was done in the trade school almost level.
Interesting.
And of course, if you go to the Francophone region today, I think that's one of the reasons they do have less of a developed public market. While you can find CPAs there, you know, their emphasis was never that. But you go to the companies, for example, that had a British influence, they have very robust legal systems, and they have very robust accounting practices. And you can find not only the big guys there, but there's a lot of fairly strong local firms. And you can talk the same language, you can get information, and there's one other thing that's very helpful. They are not totally litigation shy. So believe it or not, sometimes you read the reports and say, thank goodness they're not in America. They'd get sued for telling you that, even though it's the truth. So they're much more open. You know, I'm not talking about insider kind of information or
right.
something. I'm just talking about they're more open in their discussions. At times they're apologetic for not having done something, whereas in America we're so afraid to say anything that these reports are, you know, very voluminous and sterile. They tend to be refreshingly open about the businesses in many cases.
It's very interesting. If you're just joining us, Robert Sherrar is our guest today. He is the Senior Portfolio Manager for Commonwealth Funds, commonwealthfunds.com. And just last thing I have time for here, Robert, if somebody wants to take a look at the fund, they can go to the website. I pulled up my handy-dandy Morningstar analysis sheet on your fund, and it shows a minimum purchase of $200.
That's correct.
All right, so we can get in. And last thing I'll ask you is, what would you recommend that if somebody wanted to diversify their existing portfolio, either working with an advisor or on their own, what do you think is a good idea to start with for percentage-wise of an existing portfolio for either looking at it for Africa only or maybe a several of the frontier type of or less developed type of countries, funds that may focus on each one? What would you do percentage-wise?
Well, if somebody's equity portfolio,
yes.
I'm very comfortable with somebody having 20 to 40% of their equity portfolio in global stocks.
Okay.
I think that you would want of that absolute 20 to 40% of the equity portfolio, you know, you might find yourself with 5% or so in the frontier market.
Very good. I like that answer. That's kind of what I was thinking, is something where you've got some exposure. So we're not advocating somebody take their entire IRA like we see on television, you know, people.
No.
Take all your IRA and put it in gold. We're not saying put all your IRA in Africa, but it could definitely provide that diversification we talked about.
Well, I have one other quick suggestion, and that is, if you ever believe in dollar averaging, this is what you do.
Yeah.
Because there's volatility in exchange rates, there's other things that happen. If you said, I want to have $1,000 in Africa in your portfolio, we are a no-load fund, but even others, it may not be that expensive to transact it. You'd be far better off staging that $1,000 over 6 to 9 months as opposed to one time, because there's such swings with all the things going on in the world today, as you know, as you can see, and it can take 1, 2, 3% off your portfolio return. And maybe in 5 or 10 years that doesn't matter, but I find people do really, I think you're better off by dollar averaging in, because that smooths out the currency risk, it smooths out some of the local market risk, and so sort of set how much you want. And no matter who's you're doing it with, do that over some time period so that you don't put it all in at one time.
Excellent. Good advice, Robert. Robert Sherrar is our guest, and Commonwealth Funds is the fund family and also the website, commonwealthfunds.com. Robert, thank you very much for being on our program.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.
My pleasure.
Want to learn more about Real Money with David Holland? Visit us at realmoneyradio.com, where you can listen live or to the archives. You can also email us your questions, comments, or show ideas to info@realmoneyradio.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook at Real Money with David Holland.
Remember, nobody cares more about your money than you do. This has been Real Money with David Holland. Thank you for listening.